This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning and thanks for joining me. We will continue to cover the interim report handed down by the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion. If you haven't heard this morning, yes, that interim report is in. 14 recommendations, 5 still confidential. Most of them around the architecture of our counter-terrorism efforts, but also one we were just talking about this week on this program on the anniversary of Port Arthur, that states and territories should prioritise efforts to implement the National Gun Buyback Scheme. We will be talking about that. I'd love to get your thoughts, but very soon we will be speaking to the MP who represents Bondi, Allegra Spender, to get her thoughts on what we know so far. Also this hour, we will be talking about the calls to help apprentices, the calls to help renters, two of the most vulnerable groups we have in the squeeze that we're feeling at the moment. I'd love to hear your stories about this. Also this hour, we will be talking about the perils, it seems, of recycled polyester, often used in activewear, potentially another form of greenwashing. It used to be so simple. I'd love to hear what you wear for your activewear. Remember when we used to just wear our Dunlop Volleys while we were jogging? And also, we will be crossing to Washington to talk to someone who's a bit disappointed in the Royal Tour. That person helps Jeffrey Epstein's victims. They would have liked to have seen King Charles do more. So, pretty packed, pretty varied hour ahead. But next, the MP representing the people of Bondi.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Allegra Spender is independent MP for Wentworth. Of course, that electorate includes Bondi, and she's been very generous enough to join me right now. Hello, Allegra.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me.
It's only just been an hour or two since the interim report was handed down. Have you been able to look at it, and what do you think?
Look, I've looked at it very quickly, but I will be, myself and my team are going to be poring over it and also talking a lot to our Jewish community about it. But this report is really sort of focused much more on the security aspects of the inquiry, and I expect the full report will also cover sort of broader issues raising around anti-Semitism, which is a broader issue as well as some of the more security aspects focused in this part of the inquiry.
Yes, there are those two parts. Is there any suggestion that the confidential chapters might be covering that, or is this report only about that security element?
Look, I think it's mainly about the security elements. I think my understanding is the confidential chapters are really focused on things that we don't want from a security sense being out there and in the public domain, because that actually compromises national security. I'll be seeking a briefing on those. But I think it's really about both the security. At this time, it's about sort of counterterrorism activities and recommendations around how we manage counterterrorism, but also around how police protect the Jewish community, especially on holy days and special events. And that is something that is really important to my community, because it was a holy day and it was a big public event where this attack took place. And so I think it is really important that there is public security on those sorts of events, so people can still celebrate their religion, things that, you know, important holy days in a way that Australians expect everyone to be able to support them, you know, freely, you know, with others, without, you know, being fearful of their own safety.
So for people who haven't read it, the recommendation is that procedures adopted by New South Wales Police in respect of those high holy days should apply to other high-risk Jewish festivals and events. It's not entirely clear. By implication, it seems to be just talking about New South Wales, but from what you're talking about, you would expect this to be implemented potentially across the nation?
I think absolutely. I think it should be implemented across the nation for the Jewish communities, because we have seen, you know, we saw the terror, you know, the attack on at a synagogue in Melbourne. So we know that this doesn't just apply to the New South Wales Jewish community. This does apply to the Jewish community across the country. And so I think it's really saying, you know, the approach of New South Wales Police should be adopted more broadly across the nation. And that's certainly what I'll be looking for in terms of the implementation implementation of this recommendation.
And that's what your Jewish electorate has called for as well, that higher security level?
I think people do want that security level. I mean, let's be honest, I think people would want, really genuinely would love that security not to be needed. And that really comes back to it, is like, how do we get back to being a country where no part of our community, none at all, should feel that they need to, you know, have their schools behind bars because of risk, you know, and need police in these instances. So I think this is about saying, look, we need the security in the short term, but I do think this is, you know, this is a question, and I hope that the broader Royal Commission gets to this, which is, how do we build an environment where all of our communities are safe to express their religion, you know, to celebrate on special occasions with no concern about their security. Now, that might not happen in my lifetime, but I think that's where we should get to, because that's the multicultural, multi-faith country we want to be, and no community in our country should be excluded from that desire.
Mm. You're listening to Allegra Spender, whose electorate encompasses Bondi. Also, there is that admission that there's room for improvement in the government and police agencies in the legal frameworks, but there wasn't any gap in those frameworks that impeded the terror attack being prevented or responded to. How does that land with you, Allegra Spender?
Well, look, I'm still, as I said, I'm still working through it and expect to have, I'm seeking a confidential briefing on this. I think there have been questions raised about the security vetting of one of the alleged perpetrators. And so that's what I'll be following up and see if any of this is covered in the confidential aspects. I can understand you can have situation where to say there's no obvious gap, but they still should be strengthened, or there are ways that you can make it stronger. And I guess, I think those two things can be logical, but I'll be seeking further information on that as well.
The Prime Minister in his press conference has been asked how long it will take to implement the recommendations. He's saying, you know, we're acting on it now, we're releasing it now, we're looking at it now. Have you got thoughts for him about the timeframe?
Look, I think that's fine for the day he got the recommendations, but I expect within the next week we should be getting timeframes, and that's what I'll be seeking in terms of the sort of, you know, weeks, months ahead in terms. And some of these recommendations are more sort of straightforward, and some more complex. And again, some of those are not public, but I think timeframes are critical because. You know, a recommendation that doesn't have a time frame, you know, commitment that doesn't have a time frame doesn't end up being really a commitment at all. So I think that is really, really important. But, you know, I respect the government for coming out today and saying we're adopting all the recommendations. That's what I was hoping for. That was the response I'm hoping for. And I think that will give the community, you know, a real sense of, you know, that this is being taken seriously as it should be.
And before I let you go, Allegra Spender, also the Prime Minister had sidestepped a question about why counter-terrorism funding declined significantly in the 5 years to 2025. Will you be making representations to him in that regard?
Look, I think that is a really important question in terms of counterterrorism and also radicalisation, because I think this is the having spoken to the security services, they are really concerned about radicalisation and extremism and how quickly that can happen. And so the government has committed to increasing the counterterrorism and their security services budgets. That's absolutely right. But that is it's a very fair question on the government in terms of those counterterrorism pieces. Now, I just wanted to make one final request before I go, mm-hmm. which is also, if people have experienced anti-Semitism, and you know, I would really urge them to make a submission to the Royal Commission. You can make it privately, you can make it anonymously, you can in a way that your privacy can be protected. You can actually get legal support from Legal Aid to do that. But it is really important, and I think that I know there are some people in the Jewish community who are nervous about speaking up, and I just want to really urge people to speak up. Because this matters, and this matters to the Jewish community now, but also the safety of the Jewish community going forward. And you know, I was at one of our local Jewish schools just yesterday, and asked the principal how the kids are, and he said every single day our kids, there's something that comes up which is about Bondi. Like, we are living with it every single day. And, you know, it is our collective responsibility to make sure, you know, to reduce the chances as much as we possibly can for this to never happen again.
Such an important reminder. Allegra Spender, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mary.
Allegra Spender, independent MP for Wentworth. Of course, that electorate includes Bondi. Let's have a little listen as well to the press conference. It wasn't just the Prime Minister. Here's a little bit of Attorney General Michelle Rowland, followed by Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke.
And as the Prime Minister said, we will adopt and implement all the recommendations relevant to the Commonwealth and work with the states and territories to ensure a nationally consistent approach to implementation.
We are ready and able to be able to undertake the review that's being recommended. Those joint teams, there's joint teams for each of the states, and obviously both governments have to be able to agree, but from a Commonwealth perspective, we're ready to go.
Michelle Rowland and Tony Burke there. You will get all of the developments across all of the ABC news platforms as the day continues. This is The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Next, let's have a talk about apprentices. Are you an apprentice? Are you struggling? That's what we're hearing. Tell me your story.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
It's 17 minutes past 11. Well, the Peak Business Group here in Victoria is calling on the state government to offer free fuel to apprentices. And that's in the context of there being a falling number of trainees. What do you think? 1300 222 774, is this what needs to happen? Is this what needs to happen from the state government? Amelia Bitsis is Executive Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Victorian Chamber of Commerce and Industry to tell us about this push. Hi, Amelia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mary, and good morning to you and to your listeners.
What are you asking for?
There's a range of things that we're asking for. First, I should just mention that based on a survey that we have undertaken of apprentices and of their employers, 60% of apprentices are telling us that they're struggling and having to make really tough choices between food and rent or paying for fuel in order to get to work or to get to training.
And so 60%, how many people does that represent?
That represents around 1,000 that responded to our survey. Mm. And they're telling us that they're spending at least 70% of their weekly wage on fuel.
And so you're asking for the state government to chuck in. Why is it a state government responsibility?
It's both, actually. So certainly we are asking for some support from the state government, but really what we're looking for is a range of targeted support measures. This is a system that is under tremendous pressure. The Middle East fuel crisis has made things worse, but it was a system that was already under pressure. And in that regard, we're certainly asking for the Commonwealth and the state to understand just what is happening here and to bring industry to the table to solve the problems that are facing apprenticeships, both trainees in trade and non-trade.
You're listening to Amelia Bitsis from the Victorian Chamber of Commerce and Industry calling for free fuel for apprentices. If you're an apprentice and you're struggling, one of the 60% that came up in that survey, give me a call. Actually, someone already has. Mackenzie, you're in Bendigo. Hi, you're an apprentice?
Yes, I am an apprentice.
And how are you going at the moment?
I'm good, thank you. I'm actually at work at the moment.
Yeah. And what do you think of this call for free fuel?
What was that, sorry?
There's a call to give apprentices like yourself free fuel.
I mean, that doesn't concern me totally. The main concern I have is those new laws with the junior rates, how apprentices weren't covered under that.
Oh, right, of course. The Fair Work Commission decision to change those 18 to 21-year-old rates, is that right?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a stitch-up. We got left out of it.
Right. Okay, and you'd feel a lot that would give you the wiggle room you need at the moment, Mackenzie?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'm a third-year apprentice, so I'm on about $22 an hour, and I bought a house last year, so it's a bit of a stretch to make that.
Yeah, but you still managed to buy a house.
Yeah, well, that was from help with an inheritance from my grandma who died.
Mm.
So I didn't really make that myself.
So would you agree with the results of this survey, Mackenzie, that a lot of apprentices are struggling at the moment between the pay rate and what else is happening?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Mackenzie, thank you so much for calling in. Amelia Bitsis, that seems to back up your thesis there, but I guess it's a whole range of things. It's not just the fuel, it's the pay rates as well.
So there's a range of things that we're asking for. So obviously the fuel is one of them, but a range of other cost of living support measures. So we certainly want to see targeted support, support for those apprentices who are in the regions. In the longer term, we'd like to see the apprentices have access to fee-free TAFE, and that becomes really important not just for the apprentices who are currently in the system, but for those who, for whatever reason, don't compete or can't complete their apprenticeship. It's very important that we keep them in a training program. In Victoria, we're going to need almost 700,000 tradies in trade and non-trade by the end of the decade. So you can see that there's going to be tremendous pressure on the future in terms of economic growth, et cetera, if we don't have those completions. And at the moment, we've got real issues with tradies even commencing. Mm. So we've had, and there was a data set that was released just a couple of days ago, but that showed that for Victoria, we've had a 66% reduction in non-trade occupations and 41% in trade occupations.
Yeah, well,
starting a trade.
And that can't be sustainable.
It's not. And so that pipeline's really problematic. One really good thing that came from our survey results was that 92% of apprentices said that they feel very supported by their employer.
Oh, that's a good stat. We like those stats, Amelia.
So, well, it is really important because, you know, I think one of the things that we can't forget here is that the employer and the apprentice are kind of in the system together.
Mm.
And we should have the ambition to be the apprenticeship capital of Australia, just like we were the education state.
Yeah.
How great would it be if we were the apprenticeship capital too?
Well, and would it fit on a number plate? That's as well. Amelia Bitsis, thank
you. Capital will.
Well, that's right. Amelia Bitsis, thank you so much for giving us that insight today.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Amelia is Executive Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Victorian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Your text suggests the free fuel idea. This on text, great idea. We need future tradies. Zoe's saying, from the parent of an apprentice, my son had to go to a team building day last week, wasn't paid and was required to attend. Tradies, young people in general, are feeling the squeeze. It's always the most vulnerable who suffer most. And others who do are renters. This was another survey with a pretty appalling snapshot from Anglicare talking about the unaffordability of rentals at the moment. Paul McDonald joins me from Anglicare Victoria. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mary.
What did you find?
Well, we found a pretty grim and bleak result. I hate to bring your listeners down, but let's just quickly go through it. It's what we do is each year we survey all the rental properties that are available on a weekend, and this year it was around the March 14th, 15th weekend. And what we do, there was about 15,000 rentals available for anyone to rent. And what we measured against those rentals was, well, if someone was on a government assist payment, such as a youth allowance, a disability support pension, if they're on a minimum wage, et cetera, if you get what I mean, how many of those rental properties were affordable? That is, and the definition of affordable is anything under 30%. So how many of those properties would only absorb 30% or less of your income to actually occupy? And really, as I said, opened by saying the results were very grim. They are. So anyone on a low, on a Commonwealth Assist benefit, look, job seeker, youth allowance, disability support, we found that there was no rental properties. In fact, available that were affordable to actually access?
None.
No.
What properties were you looking at? The whole lot?
Yeah, the whole lot. The whole 15,000 that are rental. We even actually had a look at shared property rentals and shared rooms, and only 22 of those were available for those on the aged care pension. Other than that, not affordable. And so, so this was striking. And unfortunately, this was backs up very consistently with our survey last year. And I will say, Mary, when you have a look at is it just Victoria? And I'll tell you the national data, because we do this nationally as well. We surveyed in total 50,000 properties or 49,000 properties, and all with the similar result. None of the properties, if you're holding a youth allowance, if you're holding a job seeker allowance, even if you're a single parent with a child on a pension, none of those were affordable nationally as well. So this just demonstrates to you, one, the lack of affordability. The conversation needs to be on more social and affordable housing. And because we're seeing also the flow-on effect, I think, given our range of services, we see those flow-on effects into our emergency relief and other allocations, where people are trying to supplement their meagre income by grabbing some emergency relief food so they can actually pay for the rentals that are out there.
Yeah, the domino effect. Paul McDonald, CEO of Anglicare Victoria, is with me. So, Paul, just before I let you go, you're calling for, obviously, more affordable housing. Is there anything in the shorter term that you're calling for?
Well, certainly... this has to be the conversation. Look, for the federal government, they've got a large budget coming up, and really something particularly that picks up youth in this. I mean, Mary, we've got a lot of young people, young adults, unable to access into certain housing, affordable housing. We need a youth housing supplement from the feds. They've just got to turn and look at it and say, this cohort needs our care. And from a Victorian government perspective, I do welcome the 7,000 social housing, but can we have a rolling stock agenda that in fact actually continue? We're so far behind the affordable housing because of, you know, I think governments have been asleep at the wheel on this for too long, and our housing prices have gone too hard. But we do need like our public transport effort, if I could put it like this, Mary, a public housing and social housing effort to equivalent to actually really populate Victoria with the housing needed. And this pain is not only felt in Melbourne Metro, but across regional Victoria as well.
And Paul, are you suggesting that there needs to be a special dispensation for social housing for younger people?
Well, they're not getting into the social housing market, unfortunately, because the youth allowance income is less than the job seeker income. What happens with community housing providers is they don't, you know, it makes it unaffordable or difficult financially to accept a young person in as opposed to an adult. And so we're not even getting young people who make up 25% of the, who make up, you know, 25% of sort of the Australian homeless population, but only getting 1 or 2% into the social housing market. That's crazy.
A big disparity. Paul McDonald, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much, Mary.
Paul McDonald, CEO of Anglicare Victoria, talking about the youth. We were talking about apprentices as well, young apprentices squeezed. Blanche, you've called from Narre Warren. Your son is a tradie, an apprentice?
That's right, yes. He just joined about it's been a year now. But I just wanted to make you all aware of that most of the employers are not providing grants to employers to employ apprentices.
That the government isn't giving grants to employers?
To employ apprentices. So that's why it's making it so hard for apprentices to get into, you know, employment as an apprentice.
How's he going with it?
He's at last he got a job, so he's enjoying it at the moment. So hopefully it lasts for some time till he finishes his 4 years.
What sort of apprentice is he, Blanche?
He's doing electrical, becoming a sparky.
Oh well, a very useful son. And do you think that he is also struggling with the fuel prices and so forth? Is he living with you, or is he...
Yeah, he's living with me at the moment.
Yeah.
So I give him some money for fuel. But my main concern is hopefully he can continue with the same company, you know, for 4 years.
Yeah.
Because there were other apprentices in the same company, and they were sent off. so they had to look out for another job.
Yeah.
So that's my main concern.
Blanche, best of luck to you, being the bank of Blanche for your son, and also the best of luck for him. We do need those tradies into the future, and as we heard, that the numbers are slipping. So how do we help the young in our society? Keep those conversations coming, those texts coming, and hopefully we'll get to more of them. But also, I want to ask you, what do you wear when you exercise? If you've bought those leggings and they were made with recycled polyester and you thought, that's great, I'll get fit, I'll help the environment. Well, we're going to hear that that might too be another form of greenwashing. Remember, when things are simple, maybe you don't go for that recycled polyester stuff. Maybe you're still in the cotton shorts and the Dunlop Volleys. Tell me what you wear when you exercise. That's coming up next.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Activewear, activewear.
Buying groceries in my activewear.
Activewear, activewear.
Having coffee with my friends in my activewear.
Activewear, activewear.
Going to the movies in my activewear.
Activewear, activewear.
Get a manicure in my activewear.
Activewear.
Still one of the funniest parodies. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Activewear from Skitbox. And every time I put it on or I even see someone in activewear, I think of that song. What do you wear as activewear? 1300 222 774. Do you look at recycled polyester and think, no, that's not for me, I haven't worn that, I'll never get into that stuff? I'd love to know what you wear. 1300 222 774. If you have been thinking you are helping the environment by making a purchase of activewear leggings made with recycled polyester, my next guest has something to tell you. Suniyat Islam is Associate Professor of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, tell us the bad news. Recycled polyester, it's supposed to be good, right? Because it's recycling plastic bottles. What's wrong with that?
The interesting part is like 98% of our polyester that we claim as recycled polyester is coming from PET bottles, which is, I think, a problem by itself, because we are basically taking a closed loop system and taking the output from a closed loop system, bringing it to the fashion system where we have got recycling challenges, which is like basically breaking a closed loop system, bringing to a non-closed loop system where we are not doing the right thing, I guess.
Just to explain to people why a closed loop system is better than taking it from one to the other. Can you just explain that?
So ideally, the PET bottles should remain as PET bottles, because you can almost like infinitely recycle them to PET bottles. Whereas when it comes to the fashion system, you are mixing and blending it with other fibers, and we struggle to basically recycle them at the end of the life. So that's what I mean by when it comes to, like, you know, breaking the closed loop cycle, bringing it to a non-closed loop cycle.
And in what ways is it wrong when it gets to that other system? What goes wrong at that point?
Now, see, like, you know, I do not want to demonize synthetic fibers.
Say, okay.
Polyester is not the enemy. The main thing is, like, you know, durability wise, if you want to have a cheaper fiber, and because it is like coming from our refinery industry, it is a fiber that gets the most use in the fashion and textile industry. We have them in our puffer jackets, thermal layers, compression tights, hospital robes, everywhere. I mean, that's one part of it. Mm-hmm. It's a high performance fiber, but the problem starts when we start to look at the end of life solutions for, can we have a circular system where we bring the polyester back to its original sort of usage, where there are significant challenges in our recycling systems currently. There are some good stories, but nobody has sort of cracked that system. Like, you can be 100% bring it back to the using virgin polyester.
Yep.
It's good to have virgin polyester Sometimes use has got better environmental case rather than using recycled polyester. And that's sort of like, you know, kind of controversial, but it is what it is from data. Yeah.
So what you're saying is there's nothing wrong with polyester per se. It's just the lack of being able to recycle it properly.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, though, I believe that you discovered microplastics are a part of this problem. They are just popping up everywhere.
Yes, I was just going to harp on that issue. Like,
harp away.
Thank you. I was going to say, like, in terms of like recycled polyester, from academic evidence, we can see there's 55% more microplastics coming out of the recycled polyester. And when you are using that in, like, you know, say mechanical recycling, which basically shreds down the fiber into smaller pieces, so there are more microplastic sheddings during laundering and other processes, maintenance processes of the clothing, that actually poses more environmental threat of, like, you know, releasing microplastics into our waterways, going into our food system. So that's where the issues are. Yeah. Like in European Union, they sort of, like, you know, took that opportunity of using recycled polyester, recycled materials into their new clothing. And this is sort of in their agenda for a bit, but like trying to recycle materials, are we basically sort of provoking a bigger problem that is going to impact our future generations? So that's where I am questioning, like, use of recycled polyester.
Yes.
Durability wise, it is less than virgin polyester. Microplastic shedding wise, it is 55% more compared to virgin polyester. So that's where the...
So maybe virgin polyester is the best. You are listening to Saniyat Islam, who is the Associate Professor of Fashion and Textiles at RMIT. We're talking about recycled polyester. I'm also asking you what you wear to exercise. Your active wear, have you always shunned the polyester, let alone recycled polyester? You're going back to basics. Greg, you've called in from Ringwood. What do you wear, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, that's fine. Generally, lately I've been trying to use fine merino wool. It's a bit expensive, but...
When you exercise?
Yes, woolen T-shirts. They're really quite good. You don't get as smelly as or sweaty as cotton or polyester.
Okay. Do they wick the sweat?
Yes.
They do.
And they don't get smelly, which is the best. You can wear them a couple of days, especially if you're travelling.
And are you a convert back? Did you try the polyester types and then go back?
Yeah, I've got polyester and cotton. Yeah, I find them, they get a bit, polyester gets very smelly quickly.
Yeah. Greg, thank you for that. I'll confess to you, Greg, and to you, Saniyat, that I actually do go for the polyester, but I go to op shops to find it. Does that let me off the hook, Saniyat?
You are doing the right thing by definitely reusing what has already been created, right? So, like, you know, at any given point, reuse has got a higher, like, sort of environmental impact than, like, you know, using virgin ones. So I think you're doing the right thing, but
I get some marks, but not top marks.
I agree with our caller. Like, there's this amazing fiber that we produce has been in our history of, like, you know, textile use for the last 10,000 years, it goes back to that. It's wool. And, like, it's a, like, you know, in one of my favorite fibers to wear, because in Australia and specifically in Melbourne, like, you know, the weather sort of, like, you know, has four seasons a day, and it actually gives you that, like, you know, flexibility of wearing that over multiple kind of weather patterns.
And that's wool and cotton?
Cotton next to where, like, wool industry has been, like, really innovative. And, like, we think about, oh, we are going to wear wool when it is like sort of cold, but there are wool swimwears, like, you know, wool underwears, wool like, there are
exactly
great businesses like Pear that, like, you know, has come up with, like, socks that are going to be not smelling for 72 hours, that's what they say. And like, you know, amazing products that are out there. And I think, like, you know, having that as a primary agricultural product of Australia, I think we should promote that, those fibers.
Yeah. It's 20
the two industries. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We've got the innovation. Why not use it and also save the earth and feel a bit better about ourselves? 19 minutes to 12. Mark, you've called in from Ballarat. What do you wear when you're exercising?
Well, I'm a mammal, so I'm a middle-aged man in Lycra.
Yeah, and, you can't get away from it then.
No, and the smell that emits after a period of while, I've worked out how to clear that. And basically, I take my riding kit, put it in a bucket of warm water with probably half a cup of white vinegar.
Oh, and, yes.
Let it soak for an hour, and it seems to release all the sweat particles, so to speak, and then I throw it in the wash, and yeah, fresh as a daisy after that.
Mark, I share this tip as well. In fact, with my kids' sports gear that is soaking with sweat, I find you can even just put a cap full of vinegar in the wash with it, and it still works.
Yep, perfect. Yep.
Okay, Mark, unfortunately, we're not helping Sunnyette's argument, which is that we should be staying away from polyester. Sunnyette, I have to ask you, what do you wear now? I'm guessing with your research you need to do the right thing.
I am, very keen to utilize natural fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Like in some sort of, like, you know, say performance gears, like, you know, we have to have synthetic fibers, which is, I don't see a problem as long as we have that end of life solution within our shores to tackle the huge amount of waste that gets generated from our high consumption industry.
Yes.
As a country per person, we are basically consuming 53 garment items in a year, which is a very high number. And like, you know, sort of, I am on with your same way of not try to buy new, like, you know, use whatever is already there secondhand, like, and let's stop buying all
let's
this
stop
stuff.
Buying
where,
them.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I'm seeing some texts here that actually the real sustainability is just using it till it is worn out. That's at least something that we can do. And in terms of what your advice would be to people who go in and see on the label that there's recycled polyester, have you got any advice as to, this type is good, this type is bad, or wait a couple of years until the technology is better for recycling down the track? What would your advice be?
I mean, take all of the claims with a grain of salt. That's what I would say.
Add some vinegar.
Like, you know, it's like, add some vinegar. That cleanses everything. I mean, in terms of, like, you know, looking ahead, until and unless we have a solution that, like, you know, the end of life solutions for textile to textile recycling, that's where I think the key challenges and are in. And we are on the right trajectory. Like, you know, we have research and development going into this area. There are some really cool, recycling solutions. And I can report to you in this that Australia is probably one of the global leaders in, like, you know, textile to textile recycling.
Oh, we have got good to know.
Amazing facilities in up in Queensland. We have got, like, BlockTex, we have got Samsara Eco, and we have got, like, you know, the new state of the art facilities in Project Boomerang with Salvo Stores. It's like, we are going to the right direction.
We're going in the right direction. But yes, just beware of the greenwashing along the way. Sunnyette, thank you so much for your work and for telling us about it today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Sunnyette Islam is from RMIT. Libby, you've called from Geelong. What do you wear when you exercise? Hi.
I'm out in my trekkie decks. I exercise a lot. I do a lot of walking and cycling. I also swim, but I just wear bathers for that.
Do you cycle in your trackie decks, or are you like the mammal we heard before?
Oh, God, no. No. The whole idea of wearing lycra and exercising besides swimming is just disgusting. and whatever I wear on top just depends on the weather, really. If it's warm T-shirts and if it's cool, just... I do wear fleeces a lot in winter because they're so much easier to wash and dry and they don't stain and stuff compared to wool.
Yeah. But, Libby, you've never been tempted by the lycra? You were just anti-lycra from the start?
Once. Not once. I should say I'm out in the bush and have a septic tank, so I don't have to worry about lycra particles ending, fleece particles ending up in the sea. So,
good on you, Libby. Yep. Have fun out there. It looks like pretty good weather for your walk today.
Thank you.
Libby, are you like Libby in Geelong? Are you out there in your tracky dacks, or are you looking slightly askance at your polyester leggings? I'd love to keep on with this conversation. It is coming up to a quarter to 12, though, and we will cross to Washington next, because you've been hearing about that royal tour, the King and the Queen at the White House meeting Trump, but there is a group of people who are not happy with the King. Thinks that something else could have been squeezed into the tour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
King Charles and Queen Camilla are still on their trip to the US, and they've been getting some credit for seeming to smooth the political tensions between the US and the UK. But there are people who've been wanting more from the trip. Advocates for the victims and survivors of sexual abuse, particularly survivors of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. Joining me now is Bella Paraki, who is Policy and Programs Associate of World Without Exploitation, which is the largest national coalition in the US dedicated to ending the commercial sexual exploitation of children and adults. Bella, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us, what were you wanting out of the royal tour, and what have you got so far?
Yeah, so, you know, for the past week, I've been on Capitol Hill with survivors, and what I've heard from them, and I know what we at World Without Exploitation wanted, is we wanted survivors to have the opportunity to speak with King Charles. What happened to them is the result of powerful institutions exploiting vulnerable women and girls. And if King Charles would have taken the time to meet with these survivors, it would have sent an incredibly powerful message if, you know, one of the most powerful institutions had met with these survivors. And so we think it was a missed opportunity for King Charles to not take that meeting.
The palace said that ahead of time that the King wouldn't meet with the survivors because they cited ongoing police inquiries in the UK, and said that King Charles was not able to comment directly as well. What do you think of that statement?
Yeah, you know, obviously we really appreciate wanting to go through the legal process and not interfere. However, I don't believe that, you know, there would have been no legal ramification for the King to just sit and listen with survivors. If he just took the time to meet with them and have them share their stories and speak, I think it would have sent a very powerful message to the world that he stands with survivors, and just that, you know, thread of acknowledgement would have been very powerful, not just to the United States, but across the globe.
Mm. He did have, well, at least a tangential reference that Buckingham Palace asserts was referencing to the Epstein survivors. Let's have a little listen to what he said in Congress.
In both of our countries, it is the very fact of our vibrant, diverse and free societies that gives us our collective strength, including to support victims of some of the ills that so tragically exist in both our societies today.
To support victims of the ills. What did you think of that line?
Yeah, you know, I think King Charles has always, you know, stood with survivors, and I think that message is very powerful, and I'm glad that he acknowledged survivors. I think, however, if he acknowledged the Epstein survivors, it would have been very meaningful. And I know during his speech he talked a lot about America and the UK joining together on these issues, but I think it would have been very nice if he mentioned that they should join together to address sex trafficking, not just specifically on the Epstein case, but, you know, across the globe.
You're listening to Bella Paraki, Policy and Programs Associate in World Without Exploitation. We're talking about the royal tour. Bella, there'd be people who'd be listening to say, well, that's just part of politics, isn't it? It would have upset the president if he'd mentioned Epstein. What would you make of that argument?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think it is, you know, the United States Department of Justice's job to take the investigative leads in the Epstein files seriously. And this is for survivors, not about politics. this is deeply personal. And so the fact that, you know, leaders in our country could make this political isn't really fair.
What can you tell us about the extent of the efforts that your organization, that the survivors have made to try to meet him or to sway what he has said?
Yeah, so our organization has been working very, very closely with Epstein survivors over the past 8 months. You know, first in the fall, it was to be, you know, advocating for the Epstein Files Transparency Act, which was the law that required the United States Department of Justice to release all of the files. And now we have been working with the survivors on advocating for the compliance of the law. You know, currently, the United States Department of Justice has closed the investigation into the Epstein case. Mm-hmm. And we know that is very worrisome. There is a lot of damning evidence in many of the files that constitutes concrete leads and should prompt the Department of Justice to open investigations like we are seeing in the UK.
Yeah. Bella, tell us about World Without Exploitation. As I said, you are the largest national coalition when it comes to ending commercial sexual exploitation of children and adults, and interestingly, both online and offline. How did your organization come to be?
Yeah, so our coalition was founded in 2016, actually. So we've been around for 10 years, and it was founded to confront and end sexual exploitation and sex trafficking. And over the past 10 years, we have grown to become the largest United States-based anti-trafficking coalition working across all 50 states. And, you know, as a coalition, I think we are incredibly powerful because we are a diverse range of voices, especially uplifting survivor voices. And I think that's what we've been doing, especially over the past 8 months working with the Epstein survivors.
Tell us about broadly the situation when it comes to exploitation online and offline in the US. How's it going in terms of addressing the abuses?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in our work, we're seeing a lot of the commercial sex trade actually moving online to the digital sex trade, and more young children are vulnerable now. Just being young and having a phone is a form of vulnerability in itself. And online, we're seeing the digital sex trade very normalized. We are seeing pornography normalized, OnlyFans normalized, and this is normalizing the commodification of young girls' bodies. And social media apps are exploiting young children to these predators, and, you know, predators are have unfettered access to sexually exploit children. And so we are seeing a really high rise in predators exploiting children online. And so we've been advocating for a lot of legislation at the federal level to protect children from predators and from the sex trade.
How can that be done? Because unfortunately, this is universal, and we share these concerns here in Australia too, Bella. What are you thinking would be the point of that legislation? How do you legislate most effectively?
Yeah, I think the United States is behind, especially on protecting children online. But there's a handful of pieces of legislation specifically in the United States pending that would, one is for social media platforms to focus on the well-being of children and their safety rather than profit. A lot of social media platforms we know across the globe prioritize their profit rather than protecting children online.
Bella Paraki, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Bella Paraki, Policy and Programs Associate in World Without Exploitation, joining us from Washington, D.C. You've got a few texts you've sent to me here. The King has a very controlled schedule in the U.S., plus the U.S. administration would definitely not want the Epstein issues brought forward, Dorothy says, and yes, I'm sure that's true. It's just what the survivors wanted. And another one, he wouldn't have been able to, as Trump would have been outraged. Your text's also very inspiring when it comes to people choosing non-polyester for their active wear, I've been suitably told. And This is from someone who is working in a company that is working to make products that the clothing industry reuses the circular loop. So there is hope on the horizon there, whereas others are saying maybe speak to the ridiculous fashion industry. They need to take a lot of responsibility. Thank you so much for joining me in the Conversation Hour. You can listen to this again by going to the ABC Listen app and looking up Conversation Hour. Talk to you tomorrow.